All right, welcome everyone to CS50's seventh walkthrough. So problem set seven, CS50 finance. Really fun problem set. Of course, we're doing the walkthrough on Halloween. There was a request that I dress up as something CS50 related. So I am the cloud. And you can see it says the cloud. And this is also in honor of the CS50 Halloween party that's going on tonight. So I hope all of you will join me at this great party where there will be pizza and candy. We also have a lot of giveaways today, so I should have brought candy. I'm really sorry, I forgot. I was too busy making my lightning bolts. But there are some giveaways that aren't candy. There'll be candy at the CS50 party. So this is from ASUS. Did I say that right? It's a company that's doing some promotion on campus, and these are highly sought after. No, but if you answer a question, you'll get a t-shirt, or you can get stickers, or a brochure of everything that they sell. So there's great incentive to answer questions today. I'll have to come up with questions so I could get rid of all of these so I don't have to carry them back. Okay. I'll be more enthused, I promise. There are also lanyards, which I'm actually enthused about because I still carry all my keys on a lanyard. Okay, so CS50 finance, really, really fun problem set. So you guys are done with C, basically, as far as problem sets are concerned. Yeah, we can cheer for that. That's good. Yeah, that was a weak applause. Okay, I feel like an MC. Okay, so CS50 Finance is really fun because it'll actually live on the internet, so it'll actually be a website that you can send to your friends and have them play and have them sign up. And we'll talk about funny implications of having your friends play this game as we go along. But you will also be competing with CS50 students to see who can make the most money. So this time, unlike PZ6, it's not a coding competition, really. It's more of a, buying and selling stocks kind of finance competition. There'll be a big board for that, too. And, of course, there are always ways to hack this system, and you'll see how we're getting our data about all these stocks. There are ways to sort of hack the system and, predict and, know exactly when to sell stocks and write a script to do it for you and make billions of dollars. When I took CS50, someone who was a TF last year, actually, made it so that he made so much money that we had to expand the columns on the big board so that we can fit his dollar amount that he made. Also, I forgot to give credit to the CS50 student that wore this costume last night and gave me the idea. So what's your name?
Ben.
Okay. So Ben gave me this idea when I saw him. Okay. So without any further ado, let's get into PSET 7. So it's HTML, PHP stuff. So the topics are web programming, PHP, and SQL, or SQL. So you'll be using the front-end interface, MySQL, and then you'll be writing back-end SQL queries. So what you guys are going to implement is, like I said, a stock buying, selling, portfolio viewing, history viewing website. So you're going to have all these features available for people to basically make and manage their stock portfolios. So really, really cool, really kind of real-world stuff a lot of people at Harvard are interested in, I think. So really fun and a great chance to also show off your work to your friends and have them play with it. Okay, so the first thing we have to talk about when we do web programming is permissions. So when you write your code, you put it in a, if it's going to be a website, you put it in some folder called public HTML. And then what you have to do in a directory, public HTML, and then what you have to do is give the outside world permission to access that file. So here is basically a diagram of permissions and how they're set. So basically permissions are who are you going to allow to read your code, who are you going to allow to write your code, and who are you going to allow to execute your code. And for each of these three kind of permissions, you have three sets of people or groups that you're giving these permissions to. So the first is the owner, so that's you. The second is the group. So you can say everyone enrolled in CS50 can view this website, but not everyone outside. So that would be a group, or everyone in the Harvard network, something like that. And then others is basically the whole world. So for each of these three categories, you can give permissions to read, write, execute, or any combination thereof. So as you can see, it's RWX, so R is the first bit. So it's one, if you're just allowed to read, that's 100. And in binary, what is that? 4. Then write is 010, so that's 2, and execute is 001, so that's 1. So basically, you add up these for a maximum of 7. So if someone's allowed to read, write, and execute, then that group of people or that person gets a 7, right? So if I was the owner and I wanted to be able to read, write, and execute, the first digit of my permissions would be a 7. Okay, so you can see here all sorts of combinations. So RWX, so read, write, execute is, like we said, 7. You can read, write, but you can't execute, that's 6. So basically, if you want all three groups there on the right, if you want all three groups to read, write, and execute, what's the value of your permissions? Okay, do you want a t-shirt or a lanyard? Or neither? Okay. This is going to be harder than I thought. Okay. So for the next one, and you see all the questions I asked, the answer is on the slide. So it shouldn't really be that hard. What? Okay. So basically what you'll do is to give these permissions, you'll run the code chmod, and then you'll run the value of the permission, so what we just calculated, and then the name of the file or the name of the directory. So basically these are the ground rules. So static content, so stuff that doesn't get executed, so like HTML, that's static content, it doesn't get executed, it's not like functional or anything. So when we say execute, that's like the equivalent of like double clicking on something, right? So if you have any HTML or JPEGs, JavaScript, anything like that that's front end, so that's like client facing, then that you want that to be readable by everyone, and you, the owner, want to be able to read and write it. So the permission for that is what? Yeah. Oh, how'd you know? Yeah. Yeah, it's Chmod. Do you want a t-shirt?
I love a
t-shirt. Okay, great. You can come up and get your size. Okay, one down. All right, so basically, yeah, he's right. So you would chmod 644 because the first digit is what the owner can do. So the owner can read and write. We said reading permission has a value of 4, writing permission has a value of 2, so read, write is 6. And then everyone else can just read, they can't write, and no one's executing this code. So that would be 644. Does everyone understand how we got to that number? If not, we can backtrack and do it again, so just raise your hand. You want to do it again?
No, how can we define group? Like, how can we define group?
You can, so the question is, who is group? So, CS50 has a database of all CS50 users, for example. So you can define that as the group. You guys aren't going to be doing that. You guys are just, your group permissions are always going to be the same as your everyone permissions. Okay, so then you have, so that's for static content. So basically anything ending in any of those extensions right there. Then you can have directories. So this would be your home directory, public HTML, and then any folders inside that. So you're probably going to have a public HTML folder, and then inside that folder you'll have a pset7 directory and a pset8 directory, and maybe even a final project directory. So each of those directories also needs to be chmodded. Chmod means change mode. In order for the outside world to have access to it. So basically for folders, you want to be able to read, write, and execute, but you want the rest of the world, so like groups and others, you want them to just be able to execute. Okay, so you want them to basically be able to double-click your folder and enter inside it. You don't want to give them permission to change anything, right? And they have no reason to read it, right? Because it's not client-facing, it's all under the hood. Okay, so then you'll also be writing PHP scripts, and PHP scripts, what does chmod 600 mean? Right, you get to read, you can come grab a shirt if you want, or you can grab it after. Okay, great, 2 down. So yeah, basically you can read, write, and no one else has any other permissions. Okay, so basically remember these three types, and that'll pretty much cover anything that you're going to be writing. So make sure after you write these things to chmod them. If you don't chmod them, what's going to happen? This answer is not on the slide. If you don't chmod properly, and I should have said the PHP ones, 600 is the default. So the default is that the owner has read-write and everyone else has nothing. So that's the default. So you don't actually have to change the mode because that's the default whenever you write anything. But for the other two, you definitely do have to change it. And if you don't, so if I don't chmod 711 public HTML, so the folder public HTML, what's going to happen?
No one can see it.
So what's actually going to happen if someone tries to go to my website? Exactly. You're going to have one of those 404 not found errors. Yeah, good. You can get a t-shirt too. I'm doing so well. Okay. So there's a ton of distribution code for this, and a lot of it is very, 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 very helpful to you. Some of it's helpful in ways that, you're going to need this functionality, and you don't have to implement it. It's already implemented for you. And the other way it's helpful is that a lot of this stuff is incredibly similar to what you're going to have to write. So a lot of this you can kind of copy and paste. Just like for copy and whodunit, you just copied and pasted and then made some adjustments. That's going to be a lot of different files for this. And the other thing is you already have so many files in your directory for this problem set, like so much distribution code given to you, and you're going to have a lot more files than you're used to. So usually you just have a couple files. Now you're going to have really a folder full of files. And I forget how many exactly, but it's like 15, like 12 to 15, something like that. So a ton of files. Maybe it's not that many. But anyway, the point is you're going to have a lot more files because every page of your site is going to have its own file, basically. And so for some of these pages, if you might need a front end page like a .html and then a back end like a .php to handle whatever user input you're getting, and then you're going to have two files for just one page of the site. So that's why I say there's going to be a bunch of files. But it'll be fun because each one will be short, and you know, you can kind of break up this problem set into manageable chunks. So in terms of the distribution code, we have index.php, there's index.html, which is your like homepage of your website, so that's different. But this is index.php, which is the homepage for CS50 Finance. And that's kind of built for you, but right now the image on there is just an under construction image. So obviously you're going to want to change that, and you'll end up actually putting the user's portfolio on that page. And that's their homepage. So that's like if you're on a website and you log in, this is where you go to. Then you have common.php, which is a lot of different functions that you guys can use. You include this like common.php, and we'll actually go into that file so you can see what's in there. But this is like including a library almost, because CS50 has written a bunch of functions for you that are in common. Then you have stock.php, which is basically similar to a struct in C. It's a class. And some of you, if you've done Java programming, are familiar with classes. Basically, we have the class to handle stocks. So a stock, as you know, is not just the name of the stock. It has a price, and it has its symbol, and then it has the company's name and stuff like that. So we have a struct to store all this information. And then you also have written the login page. So you have the front login page, which asks the user for their username and password in order to log in. And then you have the back end of that page, which will actually log the user in and you know indicate that they're logged in. Helpers.php has a lot of useful functions. Three of them are lookup, dump, and apologize. Lookup will look up a stock for you, so it'll look up basically, it'll return, we'll look at it also, but it'll return a class of the stock, so you'll know the stock's price and everything based on its symbol. Dump will let you dump out whatever you're currently working with so that you can read it and debug it. So that's not something that you're going to write in your code at the end, but it's a debugging tool. So look at that if you're ever wondering how to actually debug this stuff, look at that function. And then apologize will basically apologize to the user, like alert them that they have the wrong password, for example. If they're trying to log in and they can't, you tell them that they have the wrong password by apologizing. So it's basically any kind of error that comes up, you use this function apologize to communicate that error to your user. So let's take a look at... So this is all... Let's go to helpers.php. And here's that function apologize that I said. So this one just has the prototypes, but this has the functions that you're going to be calling. So you can see apologize takes the message that you want to apologize with. So it'll take a string where you'll say what you'll apologize with. But the actual code is in apology.php. So this require once is basically the equivalent of copying and pasting all that code in here. So you can do require once, and it'll take any PHP file and basically copy and paste that code in here. So then you have apologize, like we said. You just use basic HTML to say what the variable's value is. So if you are working with, if you're doing a SQL query and you get back an array of values and you want to know, well, what stock is that array using, or like which user ID or which username or whatever, you can use this function to print out the value, to basically have HTML for you so you can see what the value of that variable is. So very simple. Log out will log out the user. look up, like we said, we'll look up a stock. So you see there's a lot. You should look through this code because it'll be important for you when you're dealing with the stock struct, but basically you can see here the way they refer to it. So variables in PHP, right, have this dollar sign in front of them. So here you basically have dollar sign stock and then arrow symbol. So clearly it's very similar to in C when we were accessing parts of a struct. Though in C this would imply that it's a pointer, so don't get too confused by that. But basically the notation to get to elements of this class of stock is by using this arrow notation, right? So remember that because that'll be important to you, because when you look up, you'll get a stock, but you can't do anything with that stock, again, like a struct or with that stock type or class. So what you want to do is actually use this arrow notation to get at the stock's price, to get at the stock's name, to get at the stock's symbol, or you have all this information about a stock. So whatever you need, you could use. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the arrow is like the dot. Yeah, it's like the dot operator of getting to elements of a struct in C. Yep. Okay, and then you have this function redirect, which will also be very useful to you, which is to redirect the user to another page. So basically, for example, you guys are going to be writing the buy function. And after you allow a user to buy a stock, you'll want to redirect them to their portfolio, right? Because otherwise, they're just going to hit the submit button to say what stock they want to buy. And if you don't redirect them somewhere, they're just going to stay on that page. But obviously you want to move them along. Or when they register, you probably want to move them to their home page and not just keep them on their register page. Does that make sense? So this function redirect will just take basically the file that you want to redirect them to. And we'll see an example of that being used. Does that make sense? Okay. And that's it for helpers. So Apologize.php just has the code for apologize, for example. So look into those. But what you need to know is basically how to use them. It's not crucial to you to know how they actually function underneath the hood, but obviously it's always useful and always helpful and beneficial to you to know how they actually work. So common.php does a lot of stuff to make sure that you're connecting to, so it'll require constants, helpers, and stocks. It'll basically require all this other code so that all of it's basically in here. And what it'll do is a lot of stuff to, first of all, check that you're connected to your SQL database, because all of your data is going to be stored in here. So basically you have to have filled out this DB name constant, which we'll look at, this DB user, DB pass, not in here. So that's in constants. And the problem set spec walks you through this much more slowly. But basically this checks that you are able to actually connect to the SQL database. Because if you can't, then you can't actually do this. So that's an important one. And then constants is what I just said, which is here you're going to be filling in your database name. For a second I thought mine was actually in here. But okay, so you're going to fill in from cs50.net/me, you can find all this information, and you want to put in that username and password and database name so that you can connect to the database. So that's basically that, and let's go up one. And we're going to go into login.php. Which is also obviously part of the distribution code. So login.php does exactly what you would think it would do, which is it allows the user to log in. So there's two files associated with logging in. There's login.php and there's login2.php. And login.php is the front end. So it's basically a lot of HTML of what the user sees. So this includes common.php, again, is basically copy and pasting everything that's in common.php. So you can look in there and see what's exactly here. Then you just have basic HTML, right, in order to make sure. So you see up here, you have a style sheet that's saying like how things should look on this page. Then you have the title is CS50 Finance Login. So basically on all of your pages, you're going to have some HTML. You'll want to change the title, right, to say whatever the page is. So basically you can use this framework and just change a few things around. And then here you have, basically you're using the logo here. So here, if you click the logo, or what's this line doing, the line that the cursor's on right now? It's making the logo link to the homepage. T-shirt for you. Okay. It's making the logo a link to the index page or the user's homepage. So if they click the logo, they go to the homepage. It's kind of like if you click Google's logo, you go to the Google homepage. Okay. So then you have the, then what's this here? Oh, sorry, my cursor's not moving when I tell it to. What's this here? It says it right here. Yeah, it's a form. Great. So this is a form asking the user for information. So you guys have seen HTML forms very, very often, I'm sure. And here's actually how to make a form. So what is this action attribute here? What is this action attribute doing? Right. So what I put here mean? Like, what does this login to .php? No, so the form, no, that doesn't load the form. What was your answer? Yeah, so it'll, well, no. So redirecting would have sent you to that page. So you don't want login to dot, well, what is login to .php? It's actually doing the logging in, exactly. Two t-shirts. Yeah, so it's actually doing the logging in for you, so you don't need to, so you don't actually go to that page, right? There's nothing for the user to see there, but you're submitting the form to that page. Does that make sense? So basically that page is going to handle all the user input from this login.php. So if you have a form and there's an action attribute, the file or whatever follows the action attribute, that is what's going to be handling the input on that form. So forms always have to submit to some page, right? And that can be completely different from the page you redirect them to. So maybe after they've completed, you know, basically in login to.php, we're going to redirect them to another page. That means when they hit submit on this form, execute whatever code is in login to.php. And we'll look at that code, but it's going to be basically logging the user in and then redirecting them to their home page. Does that make sense? Okay, so then here we just have this TR and TD is just creating a table. So that's just organizing how the form looks. So even if you didn't have this kind of setup, your form would still work. Like that would be fine, but this makes it so that it's, you know, user-friendly or like a good design. So basically you create a table and then you go down the rows and across to make these fields. So basically you have a user, oh, what's this method attribute? So we talked about the action attribute. What's the method attribute? What does it mean to post a form? Right, so that's how you're going to pass the information. So you can pass via post or what's the alternative? Get. And what's the difference? Say it louder. Yeah, so if it's get, it'll be passed through the URL so you could actually see it. So you can imagine if it's something like a password or something sensitive, why wouldn't you want to use get? Because you can see it. My questions are too easy. Okay. In the URL, you would have something like, you know, it would be like www.csfinance.net, let's pretend, / and then you might have password ? Or ? Equals, and then you would have the person's password in the URL. So you obviously don't want this. Like imagine sites like Facebook did this. That wouldn't be that great. So... although Facebook is clearly highly insecure. Yeah.
Why would you ever use the other?
Why would you ever use get? So a lot of things get passed via get, like in maps, when you're searching maps, you could pass like your area code, or sorry, your zip code through the get method. It's just if you don't care about it being in the URL, you might as well. So basically, either way will function the same. I think for the most part in this problem set, you're using post, but especially here where it's a password. Okay, so then here we have the fields, right? So we have username is literally just the text that you're going to print out. So you're going to print out username colon. So this is not a variable. This is not really, this is literally just the text that's going to be on the page. It doesn't matter if you made that password and made the next one username. That they wouldn't really align with each other. This is just the text that's going to be before the actual text box. And then you have, you know, an input, and the name of that is username. Now, this username, as opposed to the username with the capital U and the colon up here, this one actually matters because this is what you're calling that field. Okay, so this is what you're calling that input. So this one matters, the one above doesn't. And so that's name is basically how you're going to refer to it. And then what's type? Right, so it's what it is. So it's text, and what's another thing it could have been? What's another type it could have been? What? What was the answer? Oh, so, okay, so down, yeah, good. But down here, I was actually just asking for, it could have been a password, right? You're right, it could have been, yeah, it could have been a bunch of things, but I was just asking, it could have been a password. And so what's the difference between if it's text or password?
Password doesn't
Yeah, exactly. So the password won't actually come up. So it's actually simple as that to make the little dots on your password. Yeah. So when people type in passwords, it won't show up. It'll seem really, really legit, except you guys won't be encrypting these passwords. Okay, so that anecdote aside. So basically the input type, this is like basically the submit button. So this means you're going to submit this, and the value is what's actually going to show up on this submit button. Right, so this is going to create a button that basically submits the form. So that's why the type is submit. And the value is going to be login, because that's what it's actually going to say on the button. So you're also going to want to change all these values on the buttons, right? So when you guys are making forms, which you will be, like for register, for example, you're going to want to change the value of that button, because you don't want it to say login, you want it to say register. Or when you're getting a quote for these, you want it to say get quote, or something like that. And then the input names are also going to change to like username, password, whatever. So basically what this will do is it'll submit this form to the page login2.php. And login2.php is going to get what we call an associative array of information from this form. So it'll get the whatever via post. So it'll get in this array via post. It'll get what fields it has and the value of each of those fields. So it'll get like username and then whatever username was typed in, password and whatever password was typed in. So it's associative because you can refer, it's not like an array where you refer to the first element as 0 and the second element as 1. You refer to the first element as, you know, the username and the second element as the password. So we're going to see this in action in login2.php. So here we're creating variables called username and password. And here all the way on the right, you see the $_post is basically whatever was submitted via post by this form. And then you see it's an array. And like we said, it's associative. So we don't have to just refer to it with numbers like 0 and 1. We can refer to it by, you know, what is actually stored in there. So we're associating whatever the user typed in that username field in the text box, we're associating that with the word username, so we can refer to it easily like this. So that's what this is doing, $_post username. What is MySQL real escape string doing? Yeah, so it's an escape sequence that, for safety reasons, like she said, that allows you to make sure that the user is not typing in some sort of SQL attack. So they're not trying to break your code in any way. And what's an example of how someone can break your code? So what's something really bad that the user can type into the text field, and why you have to escape anything the user types into those boxes? Right. So the problem would be, in this case, the problem would be if they typed in any SQL code. Because what you're going to be doing after is making SQL queries using these variables. And if you just use the variables without escaping them, like if I just use $_post username and tried to make a SQL query, like inserting that into the database, what that would do if I just use that $_post username is literally copy whatever information is in there, so whatever that variable stores, into my code. So basically people can inject their own codes. They can write code like remove all from table. Right, and they can delete your entire table. There are like some funny XKCD, is it XKCD, those nerdy comics? Yeah, so there are some funny like XKCDs about like SQL attacks and like what you can type into. But okay, so they can do that. They can like mess with your table. Or what? What else could they do? Think about it. If they're trying to log in. So one way they'd want to hack is maybe to alter your data. Another way is just to log in without a password, right? So how could they do that? Well, yeah, it'd be space, but then you would compare that space to the password, and you'd see that it wasn't the right thing, and then you wouldn't let them log in. Yeah. So you probably can't query for the password because you won't get that information back, probably. However, you can. What else can you use? I don't know. You can't do that. Okay, so what it is you could write in the password field. So presumably, I'm going to get this variable password, right? And if I don't escape it, I'll just be using whatever they put in, and the user can assume that you're going to write something like if whatever they typed in equals password, right? Or if the password equals whatever they typed in, right? That's probably what you would do, and then let them log in if that Boolean was true. So what they can do is make the password equal, you know, anything. It could be like the number 1 2 3, the numbers 1 2 3 4 5, and then they could put an or. So you put or 1. And since 1 is always true, and they just made the Boolean an or, then they'll always be able to log in. Does that make sense? Because they assume that you're going to write if whatever they typed in is true. But if they make whatever they typed in a two-part statement where the, it's an or and the second one is true, they'll always get true. Right? So that's why you're escaping here. And then, so basically you escape those. Anytime you get any information from a user through a form, you escape it using this, MySQL Real Escape String, and then you store that in variables. So then you have to actually prepare your SQL query. So there are basically three steps to preparing a SQL query. One is you prepare the actual command you're going to do. So you can select, you can insert, you can update, etc. We'll go through these. But basically here you're selecting. And then what field? Well, you're selecting the UID from where? From what database? From the users table, or from what table? So from the users table. And then where provides constraints for it, right? So you're selecting the user ID of the user whose username is equal to the variable username and whose password is equal to the variable password. That makes sense? So that's your SQL query. That's what you want to ask. But that doesn't execute the SQL query. That just stores the string. So the SQL queries are strings, so it'll store this string in the variable SQL, so there on the left, and then you actually have to run this function MySQL query to actually execute the query. So that's the second step. The first step is you set up the query. The second step is you run the query. Now, you could have just written that entire string in that as an argument to that function. That's fine, but it's probably better to put it in a variable and just keep those two steps separate. It looks a lot cleaner than if you had a really long string in there, but it's purely stylistic. It's not an issue of correctness. So then you store whatever that query returns in a result variable, right? Otherwise, you won't get that return value. So it's the same as in C. You can't just say, like, X plus 1. That statement has no effect in C, right? So we need to be able to store whatever that SQL query returns. And what it'll return is basically an array with the results of the query. Okay, so it'll basically return kind of a table for you of all the rows that were true. So basically, if you have, we know that UIDs are unique, so each person can only have, one UID can only belong to one person. You can't have duplicate UIDs because they auto-increment as we create users. They get a unique ID. That's also why it's called UID. So we know that there's only going to be one. So we know that if we're doing this SQL query, how many rows should there be given back to us from this query? One, right? So that's obvious. So we should get only one row back if there could only be one user with that UID. If you had two users with the same username and password combination, then you could get more than one row. But you're not going to allow people to have the same username as other people in your register. Yeah. So that's what this line here is doing. So now, MySQL num rows of result is kind of self-explanatory. It does what you would think. It tells you the number of rows returned in the SQL query. So the SQL query, the return value is in result, and then you can run the function MySQL num rows on that result to see how many rows are in the query. Right? So how many rows in this case is equivalent to how many users? If you were querying for someone's portfolio, how many rows would be equivalent to how many stocks? Right? If the history table, then how many transactions? So basically, you want it to be one. And then MySQL fetch array will actually get that information from the result. So there are many steps here, right? So you have the result, which is basically like the return value, but then you actually have to access the array from that. And this will get one row. Okay, so if you want to get multiple rows, you have to put this in some sort of while loop, right? So you basically have a while loop while this was giving results, right? And you'll see how you're going to do that. And then this line here actually, it says cache UID in session, and that's basically the act of logging the person in. So this global variable session will tell us who's logged in it right now, and you're setting the UID of that session to the UID of that row. So you're querying the table for this username password combination. If you find the username password combination, you get that row and you need the UID from that row. So that row is also an associative array, right? You have an array of values that's going to have, in this case for the row, we only have the UID because in our query, we only said select UID. But had we said select UID, username, and password, then this row array would have row username, row UID, row password. We only ask for one thing, so we only have one thing, but we still have to say what we want. So we want the UID. Yeah?
So what do brackets mean after a variable?
It's like accessing elements of an array. The question was, what is the bracket after the variable? So it's the same way how we, like if this was C, we probably would have done row bracket 0, right? If we knew, or it's kind of a two-dimensional array, right? Or in this case, it's a one-dimensional because it's just the row. But if we had all the results, you know, we'd have to say what we wanted to access. It's much easier now. And you'll find in general that PHP is way, way, way easier than C. There's no mallocing, there's no freeing, which you guys are sick of after reset 6, I know. So anyway, so here you're referring to the UID from the row, and you're storing that in the session UID to say this is the user that's logged in right now. And that session variable is going to be really important to you later when you're going to want to, when you complete a transaction for a user, you're going to have to remember which user was logged in when that transaction occurred so that you can deduct money from them and stuff. Here's that redirect I told you about. So here, basically after we've logged them in, we redirect them to the index page. So this is assuming we found a username password combination that they entered in. If we don't find that, we just apologize. Here's that apologize function we were talking about, and we say invalid username and or password. And we don't let them log in. So that makes sense? Okay. So remember that, so important takeaways are that this is how to get information from a form. So login, login to communicate to each other via this mechanism, right, via this post. And in login, you had login2.php as the action attribute. And then this is literally showing you how to make a SQL query, how to make a SQL select query, how to get rows from that query. Okay? So you'll probably want to go back to this one more time. Okay, we'll go back to this. Okay, so we've been through a ton of the distribution code, and as has become clear, like you can learn a whole lot from there. Here are the features that you actually have to implement. So you already have the user logging in, but you have to allow the user to register. So you already have some registered users in your database. As you'll see, if you go to cs50.net/phpMyAdmin, that's where you can access your databases on the front end. So you can actually see everything going into your database. So if you run your code, you're debugging it, you can see actually all the stocks in the portfolio, all the transactions in the history, all the users that are logged in. And that's, you know, going to help you a lot in debugging to see what's going wrong by knowing what values are actually in this table. So anyway, that's an aside, but you're going to have user registration. You're going to have to get quotes. So you're going to use the lookup function that's already written for you, but you are going to have to get quotes from the user. So the user is going to type in what stock they want a quote for, and you're going to give them the price. That's it. Then you're going to have to maintain a portfolio for them. So you're going to have to keep track of every stock that they own right now and how many shares of it they own. And you're going to have to display that to them on their homepage. You're going to have to allow them to buy stocks and sell stocks. And for those, you'll have to deal with their cash amount, right? So you'll have to deduct cash when they buy, give them cash when they sell. And then you're going to have to keep track of their transaction history and allow them to view that. Yes? You do. So the question was, do you have to keep track of how much money they have? So yes, in the users table, one of the fields is cash. So you keep track of their username, password, and then all their amount of cash that they have. So when they buy a stock, you deduct that cash. When they sell a stock, you give them cash.
Right.
So you use the lookup function to find out how much the stock costs at the time of the buy or the sell.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm asking is, like, in terms of, you know, stock fluctuating, et cetera.
Right. I forget if the portfolio table is supposed to tell them how much their stock is worth right now. It'll say in the problem set. I don't think so, but it might. But yeah, when they sell it, obviously you have to sell it for the cost that they're, yeah, for what it costs right now. Okay, so basically we kind of touched on this, but for SQL you have to log into the database. So you're using that constants.php to put in all your database information, and then that gets logged in for you. So you don't really have to do that. Then there are three steps to manipulating the table, or three main steps, like we said. One is you prepare the query, so you can use commands like insert, select, update, delete. And whenever you have a question about how to use any of these commands, you can obviously look. I'm sure there's a ton in the lecture code or the distribution code for lecture, but then you could also just Google these things like SQL insert query and find out how to do that and find out what it takes. And then you actually have to run the query with this MySQL query function, and then you get the result back. And then to get the row, you actually have to fetch the array from the result. Okay, so it's like a three-step process to get information from the table. Okay? Does that make sense? And then when you have that row, you'll just have one row, right? And then you, in quotation marks in the brackets, you can put what field of that row you care about. So don't actually put field, but put UID or username or password or cache. Yes?
So should we give them on three separate ones, or should we nest them?
So you're not nest. The question is, should we do the queries on separate lines? So you're not nesting. I mean, the only way you can condense kind of instead of having it on three lines is you can just put the actual query string in the parentheses for MySQL query. You can put instead of $query, instead of the variable there, you can actually type out insert into users, blah, blah, blah. Right? It's up to you. It like looks a little better if it's separate, I think. But again, it's up to you. Or whatever your TFs say. Make sense? So you're gonna get that row, and this is how you access all elements from that row. Okay, that's if you're trying to get stuff out of the table. If you're trying to put stuff in the table, then you don't fetch the array, right? Okay? Okay, so the first program you're writing is register.php. And I even think of this as like a little warm-up because it's so, so similar to login.php. So just copy and paste login.php into register.php, copy and paste login2.php, or use CP. Don't just copy and paste it. Copy and paste login or CP login2.php into register2.php, and then make these changes. So change the title on that page. So in the HTML page, register.php, you want it to say register, not login. Then in the form, the action is not going to be login2.php because you don't want to submit to login2, you want to submit to register2, right? You have to add another field because when you register, you want to make sure the user types in their password twice, which is very common practice, right? So you want to add another field for them to retype their password. And then you want to change the submit button to say register. So again, this isn't going to hurt how it functions, but you want to make sure that's consistent. And then you change the link at the bottom of the page to the login page, right? Because you don't want to link to the register page on the register page, right? You're going to be responsible for allowing your user to go like through pages. So if you allow them to register, but you don't have any links on register, or and you don't direct them to something else on register 2, they're just going to be stuck on that page. All right, so make sure you give them links to go back. Whenever you have to make sure that the user has a way of getting to the history page, for example, if they want to view their transaction history. You can't expect them to actually type in csvfinance/history, right? So you have to make sure that there's ways to navigate through all these pages. So basically, register2.php, here's the pseudocode. If any of the fields basically are left blank, so any of the fields in the form, so username, password, or password 2, if any of them are blank, apologize to them. You can't register them, right? Or if password and password 2 don't match, apologize. Okay, so you might want to have different apologies for the two scenarios. One saying you didn't properly fill out the form, one saying your password is different from your two passwords are different. Okay, so that's a check, right, that they did everything correctly. Otherwise, you have your login2.php kind of copied into here, but you don't need to look them up in the table now, right? Because they're not in the table. You're trying to register them. So you want to actually put them in the table. And read the problem set spec for details on this, because if there's another user with that username, you can't create this guy with this username, right? Maybe you can. Maybe the problem set says you can ignore that. But just in case, check. So basically, you want to create your SQL query to insert the users into the table. So inserting is different than looking up, right? So it's different than selecting. So you're going to have to insert into users table, right? Or you don't actually write table. This isn't real code. You just write insert into users. And then you put what fields you want to insert. And then you put what values you want to put for each of those fields. So the fields in this case would be what?
User ID.
Username, password, and then what would be the values for those? Well, it would be what they typed in. Another field you'll have to do when you register them is cash, right? So you have to give them an amount of cash when they register. I think it's 10,000. So you have to put in that cash in their table as well. Okay? So you insert all those values into the table by actually executing MySQL query. So a query isn't just a lookup. It's also an insertion, right? That also qualifies as a query. And you store that in a result variable, even though you're not going to use that result after. Okay, and then if that result is null, that means something about that query failed. You always have to check if your SQL query results are null. Same way when you malloc pointers, I mean, for completely different reasons, but same way when you malloc pointers, you have to check if they're null. You also have to check every time you do a query that the query was executed and the return value isn't null. If it is null, then you apologize and say, I could not create user or something like that. And then if it's not null, so if it's null, apologize, else log them in. And you saw the logging in login2.php. Okay? Questions on register? Okay, so getting a quote is the next thing you have to do. So to get the quote for a user, basically now you see this form action again because you're going to have a form. You might as well copy login.php into quote.php because you're also going to have a form with two field, it's going to be one field this time, right? It's just going to be the stock symbol that they want to look up, and you're going to want to submit that form to quote2.php, not to login2.php, obviously. Method is post. It wouldn't really matter if it was get. It's up to you. This is, again, very similar to login.php. And then quote2.php will have to handle whatever stock symbol they put in. So you have to actually look up that stock symbol and get the price quote, right? You get the price for it, and you actually have to print out that price. Right, because unlike when you log in and register, the user doesn't really want a printout that says, congratulations, you've been logged in. Like, they don't really care. But in this case, they're asking you for a quote, so you print out the quote. So now you're going to need to look at this lookup function and look at the print function, both of which are written for you. Okay? So the lookup function will return a stock, right? And you want to print out the price of that stock. So again, we said that this stock is a class, so it has many different elements in it. So you need the price element. You can also use the symbol element so that you can print out a nice sentence like, and print is very similar to printf, but you can print out a sentence that says like the price of, and then put in whatever symbol they asked for, whatever stock name they asked for is, and then put the actual price. And that's all you have to do. And you can put HTML and PHP together. So anytime you can just start writing HTML, and then when you want to start writing PHP, you do a left angle bracket, question mark, whatever PHP code you want. So that's where you'd put print, and then in print you'd pass it the variable, right? And then you'd put question mark, right angle bracket to end the PHP, and then continue with the HTML. So HTML would be any of the basic text, like the price of, and then you'd put the PHP for the variable. Yeah.
Can I go back to that HTML?
Yes. So if you interrupt, so to speak, your PHP with HTML, that won't create any scope issues with the variables you declared before you interrupted the PHP. Yeah. Yeah.
So the lookup function is in helpers, right?
The lookup function is in helpers. Yes. Well, I mean, print is just you'd put the variable inside of it. It'll print it out. Like print, if you had a variable stock price that stored the price, which you don't, right? Because lookup doesn't return the stock price, it returns the entire stock. But you guys saw, right, in that class how to refer to elements of it? Well, don't say it, but yeah. Yeah, so I have to like have you guys connect the dots by yourself. So, yeah. Good question. So the question was, if you can have both HTML and PHP in a file, when do you call an HTML file, when do you call it a PHP file? I don't know that this is the right answer, but my intuition says that if it is doing PHP functions, right, then it's a PHP. If it has PHP, it's a PHP function. It's a PHP program. If it has only HTML, it's an HTML. Because HTML, remember, it's only a front end, right? It's not a back end, whereas PHP is the back end. So if you ever have PHP, you know that there has to be that code has to be executed, whereas the HTML code is just, it's like static code. It's not functional at all. Yep, any other question? Okay, so basically these are the two key functions for quote2. That PHP. You look up the symbol that they said, then you access, that's going to return a struct, you access the price element of that struct, you print it out. Simple. Okay, So then for the next two things you're going to have to do, which namely show the person their portfolio and show them their transaction history, you're going to actually have to create additional tables or additional databases in SQL. So for this, you can use the front end. So go to PHP MyAdmin, like I said. I think it's csv.net/phpMyAdmin. You'll log in with the password that's given to you on cs50.net/me. And you'll actually have to create a portfolio table and a history table. So don't get confused. This isn't each user's portfolio. Okay, this is all the portfolio. Basically, it's a portfolio of all the users. So then the way that, how do you know which user owns which stock? Yeah, so you use their UID. So that's why the UID is one of the fields, because this is all the stocks that are owned by anyone using your website. So you index them basically by which user owns them. So in this case, the UID is not unique, so to speak, because it's unique in that it refers to only one user, but multiple rows in this table can have the same UID, because the same user can own multiple stocks. So don't make that the primary key in this table. Primary key means it has to be the same for that, right? So don't make that the primary key, okay? Because it can be the same for multiple users. So basically, you've got this huge table of all the stocks owned by anyone, and then when you query that table, you have to specify. So you're probably going to be doing a select, much like in login, right? But you're going to want to specify, instead of in login specifying the username and password that was typed in, you want to specify the user that's currently logged in. The UID of the user is currently logged in. Okay, so you check where UID equals, and then that variable that we'll look at that stores the user that's currently logged in. Okay, so same thing for history. It's one big history table of all the transactions that have taken place. Okay, so you care about the UID. To say which user completed that transaction. So the other fields are in portfolio, you care about the symbol, so the stock symbol, and then you care about how many shares they own. Okay? And so if they buy stock, and then they buy more stock, more of the same stock later, you want to update the number of shares. You don't want to create a new row. Does that make sense? Okay, and then in history, you have, again, the UID, whether they were buying or selling. Because again, this is all the transactions, so you have to say whether it's they bought or sold. And then, you know, the shares, the price, the date, and the time. Okay? Okay, so I think buy is probably the most time-consuming part. But once you've done buy, sell is really easy. So for buy, again, you have buy.php, really, really simple. You can use the framework from login. They basically tell you what stock symbol they want to buy and the number of shares that they want to buy. And then in buy2.php, here is the code that will actually tell you what user is currently logged in. Right? Because when we log them in, we set $_session UID equal to whatever UID was just logged in, right? Whoever was just trying to log in when we found their username and password combination and looked up their UID. So now we're doing the reverse of that, basically. We're looking who's logged in, and we're storing that in a variable. So that UID, $UID variable, will store who is currently logged in. And then you want to add the stock to the portfolio, and you want to make sure that the UID that you're adding for that stock is the person's UID that's currently logged in. So that's why we have that. So you use an insert, just like in register2.php, but you're inserting into your new portfolio table that you've created, right? Makes sense? Not into the users table. So then you have to charge the user. So you're inserting a stock into the portfolio table using that user's UID so that you know that it's theirs, but then you have to update the users table in order to charge your user. So you have to deduct cash from them in the users table, but put in the stock in the portfolio table. Okay? And you make sure that you look up the same UID in both. Right? So you update the users table where the UID is the person who's currently logged in, and you insert into the portfolio table, and you insert the UID of the person that's currently logged in. And then you have to do the same thing you do in adding to the portfolio, adding into the history table. So you log this transaction into the history table. Make sense? Okay, so in order to buy, you're going to have to obviously figure out how much money to charge them, so you have to look up the price of the stock. Okay, so this is going to be the same as your quote2.php, basically. You're going to look up whatever symbol that they're trying to buy, and then you'll get the stock struct, and you need to get the cost from the struct or the price. And then you have to look up in the users table the user that's trying to make the buy, so again, the user that's currently logged in, and you check if they have enough cash. So you have to compute like the price of the stock times the number of shares they're trying to buy, and make sure that that is less than the amount of cash that this user has. And the amount of cash they have is in their users table. Okay? If they don't have enough money, apologize, and don't complete the transaction. So don't insert that stock into the portfolio, don't log that transaction in the history, and don't subtract any cash from them. Else, complete the transaction, meaning insert it into history, insert it into portfolio, and deduct the cash. Okay? Sell is the opposite of that, right? So it's extremely similar to buy. If they own the stock, delete the stock from their portfolio. And the command would be delete from would be the query, and you'd create that query, and then you'd run the use MySQL query on whatever query you just created, and then you have to give them back their money. So it's basically the same as in buy 2.php when you're looking up the cost and subtracting that money, except now you're adding that money back to them. So it's the cost at the time of the sale, obviously, and then you log that in the history table. So you delete it from their portfolio, you give them back money, and you log it in the history table. Yes. So if they only sold, so they'll tell you how many shares. I forget if you have to allow them to sell certain shares only. So if you have to allow them to sell only 100 shares and they own 500, then you're just updating the table to make sure that they have fewer shares. But the way I remember it is that if they sold, they just sold all of their shares, in which case you just delete it from. I don't remember. You can read in the problems that I think that you have to sell all your shares if you're selling. But it could be that you have to handle only selling part of your shares. But if you have to sell all your shares, then you delete that from the portfolio, because then they don't own any of those shares. Obviously, you delete it for the user that's currently logged in. Okay, so history, basically what you want to, so you have this history table that you've been inserting things into, and then on the history page, you just want to select everything from history for that user and print out that table. So in this case, you're going to have more than one row, right? We saw when we only have one row, now you're going to have more than one row. Okay, so you're going to use this while construction, and I actually wrote it for you. So you're going to do while row equals MySQL fetch array result. You're going to print out all the values in that row. So you're going to print out the row. You probably won't print out the user ID, but you'll print out whatever you want in the history table. So whether it's bought or sold, what time it happened, what stock it's referring to, et cetera. And then this is the last thing. Basically, when you think you're done, you want to check these things. So does your site work across multiple browsers? So like Firefox and IE, for example. Is your input validation sufficient? So make sure that you're not letting them type in empty values. Like you're complaining for all these things. Apologize for empty values. Apologize if they try to buy negative shares, fractional shares, et cetera. These are the kinds of things that we're going to be throwing at your code when we're grading. And then, again, checking for failure of MySQL query. So making sure if that's ever null, that you complain. Yes, question. Wait, actually, let's just wrap up on the video because we're running out of tape anyway. So that's pretty much it. This is really, really fun. Good luck. Happy Halloween. And we'll see you next week for the last problem set. Good luck.